This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
In fact, good yawning this morning. The chill is back in the air. It's a wonderful time to not have any AC in your bedroom. Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk, and a little jokes all day. It is Thursday, the 16th of December, 2021, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Well, good morning. This morning, my guest joining me in studio is Dr. Reverend Reg Eldon, and today we're going to continue our discussion about loss and grief, particularly in the time of COVID and during the holiday season. I think this is a conversation that we all need because we are all experiencing grief of one kind or another. And so today, we're going to take some time to explore that. I was trying to talk a little politics at the beginning of my show yesterday, and somebody texted in and asked me why I still talking about the carnival. But let me just tell y'all, if you didn't want to pay your cable bill this month, you don't have to, because there's just lone entertainment in the paper, no pun intended. This carnival discussion is fascinating, and I think this is a teachable moment. One of those incidents that if we properly document it, we can use to teach people about politics and governance and the dangers of blurring or allowing the line between politics and governance to be blurred. See, I don't mind. I could be honest with you all. I don't mind if the carnival don't open. I get motion sickness. I get sick on the teacup ride. I don't even get to get on the big people them ride. I can't handle it. My body can't handle it. I just get sick and I got to go sit in the car and drink some tea. So for me, I'm not personally invested in this discussion, but this is an important discussion, like all of the discussions that we have. But I'm going to try and avoid politics this morning. I have a valuable member of the community here, the wider community. And I want to open up today's session to calls and texts. If you have questions for Dr. Reverend Reg Eldon, you can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96. That's 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. Or you could call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. Again, that's 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. As we begin the show, I want to say good morning and a special thank you to Bethel Brothers Morticians and Crematorium. This is the family that helped our family go through the process of a burial for my aunt, Dr. Nurse Juanita Green, who passed away earlier this month. And I just want to say that I don't like funerals. Nobody does, right? Nobody does. I don't like them. And this team put so much effort into ensuring that we had as smooth a process and experience as possible. When you see people, I didn't know this used to happen, but their team basically led the hymns at the graveside. Right? And that's what you, and in that moment you realize, that's what gave me the courage to open my wobbled throat up and sing my bad singing. Right? But it made me comfortable enough to join in. And I want to say thank you to them, and I already told them they will be responsible for burying my most valuable and precious mango and fruit trees, the things dearest to me. Thank you once again, Bethel Brothers Morticians and Crematorium. And listen, while we're here to talk about grief and loss, I want to encourage people. In fact, not let me say that again. Last time Dr. Eldon was here, we talked about his book, In Memory of Them, which is a collection of eulogies that he wrote and delivered during his years of service with the Methodist Church. And I think it's so important for us to embrace that practice of writing eulogies for those that we love as a part of the process of honoring our ancestors and honoring the dead, but also as a part of the process of understanding ourselves and ensuring that we maintain a connection from the future to the past. That's right, from the future to the past. Don't mind the present. We ain't that important. It's the past and the future is more important than us. That's our job, right, is to make sure that those links are firm and remain. And so when I read my aunt's eulogy, I just realized that she was a phenomenal woman, far more phenomenal than I could have understood as a child growing up. I didn't even realize that my aunt was the first, I don't even know how you say it, but she was a doctor nurse. She had a doctorate in nursing, and she was the first one to achieve that in the Bahamas. And then I realized that I used to think it was just my Chikchani Ketchin side of the family that sort of entrenched this boldness and this ambition in me. But it's all sides of my family, phenomenal women, supported by the men and the women in their families, to dream beyond anything imagined before. And those are things that we typically capture in eulogies. Sometimes we don't even know the fullness of ourselves to share with our loved ones while we're still here. And so I want to encourage everyone to think about these rites and rituals. Begin writing your own eulogy. Begin writing the eulogies of those close to you and near to you, those that we think are more vulnerable than others to death, but remembering that death comes at any time for anybody. And so, just do it. Just reach out and do it. And so I just want to say to those that captured the most precious and valuable moments of my aunt, Dr. Nurse Juanita Green's life, thank you on behalf of the Green and Hasty family. Thank you very much. So I have a text here. Okay, my text here says, great show as usual, Miss Green, but we talking about death again? We ain't had a good Christmas last year. Ask your guest if he could divert from talking about death and talk about giving gifts from John Bull. Well, dear texter, now that I have your text number, I'm going to invite you to come in and talk about giving gifts from John Bull, because I think you understand. Anyway, thank you, texter. But no, this is important as well. This is a part of life. And it's unfair of us to sort of sit here and just celebrate and ignore the experiences that the majority of us are going through. The majority of us have lost someone. And the greatest gift we could give them is to help them process these things. But my guest is ready to jump in.
No, I just wanted to say something to that, to the lady who sent the text. Yes, absolutely. And that's connected. I took part in Ebenezer Methodist Church's annual Christmas concert, which I always do. I write and do the commentary for that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that at the end today. Mm-hmm. We had the theme of comfort and joy, and one of the pieces I wrote for that concert Sunday night was that very same thing, that we cannot sit by and wait for somebody else to make us happy. And I talked about, you know, making sure, doing things like, I told the story of a friend of mine who is an older lady, but very arthritic and has difficulties with her knees. And one night she was by my house and we were playing, I was playing on my MP3 8 player with my YouTubes, and we were taking requests and songs and all of that stuff. And suddenly I found this old song that I liked a lot, Good Night Irene. You know, mm-hmm. It's way back. I love it. I have always loved the song. And I played that at full volume. A friend who sometimes could barely walk, was walking with a cane, got up and started waltzing through my living room. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And it's like, I just stood there, and then I got up and I joined her, and we danced like for 10 minutes until that song finished. Mm-hmm. And I use that story, I told that story to say that sometimes in the middle of sadness, in the middle of death, we have to get up and dance. And I encourage people this Christmas to like fill their tables with flowers, use their best dinnerware, do everything they can to celebrate life and to say, listen, this has been a rough 2 years. We're alive. Let's do whatever we can do to celebrate and to make happiness, because many of us many times sit down and wait for somebody to give us the gift card from John Bull.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, don't have anybody give you your gift card. Find some money, put aside some money, make us a little space somewhere, and you go and get the thing that you want. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, we should, you know, prepare our own eulogies. We're writing our eulogies every day of our lives.
Yeah.
Every minute, every interaction, every encounter, every word we speak, every way we react with people, respond to people, we're writing our eulogies. Many of the people I wrote about in the book, Aaron, are people that I knew so well. I had worked with them, interacted with them. I could sit down and write pages upon pages because I knew what they stood for and what it was.
Yeah.
That was a little, that's a good point. And so to the person who sent the text, I like that. I absolutely like that.
Yeah.
Do it. I mean, let's do it.
Yeah.
And I give flowers. I buy plants. I give flowers to people. Mm. And I just love it because to me, it celebrates life.
Yeah. For me, as an activist who is being stalked, right? A lot of people look at me and say, but she's so extroverted. She's always talking to people like, that ain't real. But for me, a part of the gift that I give myself, right, mm-hmm. is my presence in a space.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people are like, anybody interested in you being in this space, right? Mm-hmm. But then you'd be surprised when you crack a joke or, you know, you sort of engage someone, that smile, right here, who you are, mm-hmm. that you thought that they were important enough mm-hmm. to share a joke with or make smile or to heal up. Like, you don't want to give somebody a gift. When you see your boy on the road or your friend, your gal on the road, hail her up. Hail her up like she's rolling with Bob. Hail her up like she's a super. You want to see a black man smile? Hail him up in the road. King man! Watch that smile. I say that's what women is do to try catch y'all. Judge you by your smile, whether you wait marrying or not. Hail you up in the road when you see that man smile.
Yeah.
And what a gift to give someone. But Arlington, that caller, could you look for that song? Come on, Irene.
Good night, Irene.
Good night, Irene. Right, that's the chorus. Yeah, yeah. Come on,
good
Irene.
Good night, Irene. Yeah, but it's a good story because it's like what happened in that little one incident, which was such a life lesson, that in the middle of limiting circumstances, in the middle of difficulties, in the middle of challenges, you can dance. You can change the narrative.
Yeah.
And every individual listening to us today has that ability. Mm-hmm. But most of us tend to fall back into the negativity and the pity me, and I've got it difficult, and I'm having a hard time. All of us have a hard time. I had a difficult day yesterday. I thought I'd lost my cell phone. Mm-hmm. And for an hour and a half, I went frantic, had a meltdown, almost had a panic attack, because I'm so addicted to my phone. And it's like, I can't live without this. There's no way I can manage. Where's my phone? Who stole my phone? I must have left in the supermarket, up and down, talking to police, talking. And it's like, I eventually found the phone because a security guard at one of the food stores came out and said, let's search your car again.
Yeah.
And he took like 10 minutes or so because I had already searched the car. But it was a difficulty. I recognize that I'm having a moment. But the fact is, however difficult it is, we have the ability to turn things around. We really do.
Absolutely. And how do we, well, Arlington, let's go to this caller. And then when we're done with this caller, I want to ask you, how do we help others do that?
Good, okay. Because
I'm saying, how do we help others celebrate, and how do we help others turn it around?
Yep, okay.
Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
I'm Miss Erin Green, and good morning to Dr. Reginald Eldon.
Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
I commend you, Dr. Eldon, on your book.
Thank you.
This is Berenice Johnson. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that it is timely, and it has lots of inspirational, motivational comfort within that. One who I would refer to in your book that you mentioned on Mr. Wendell Jones' show when I listened to you was about the British and English. They are one, and I think the remarks were from Miss Andrea Gibson, my old boss lady.
No, it's from her mother. From her mother, yes.
So?
That's from her mother, yes.
Yes. Well, okay, well, I left a message at the Bahamas Conference of the Methodist Church because my work in the national investigation would bring some comfort and also financial assistance to each and every dwelling household. So you can take my number, 426-7762.
Okay.
And we can have a conference call whenever at your convenience.
Yeah.
And former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram has to be involved.
Okay. Thank you, Bernice.
Okay, dear. Good to hear. Wish you a Merry Christmas and be safe and God blessing.
Right. You know, just a quick point from sort of what she said is that we sometimes discount how a lack of access to justice sort of makes grief hard to process and deal with. And, you know, at a state level, it's always important. I find it always important to talk to the judiciary, not just about the sort of technical side, but understanding how important it is to achieve justice and for people to feel as if it has been achieved.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Law and Order was the biggest show in the Bahamas for about two decades, because it gave you a sense that justice was achieved. And at the very least, we tried as hard as we possibly could to achieve it, even if you don't think it's been achieved.
Yep. Yeah. Very much.
Absolutely.
Yes. So you asked the question, what do we do to help?
Right, so like in that moment when your friend got up and danced, you danced with her.
Exactly.
Nobody made fun of her.
No.
Or said, no, mom, sit down, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yep, yep.
Right, and so, you know, how do we help people to celebrate and to turn it around?
Well, I think it's a 2020 question in a way, because many times when we're working with group grief, the key characteristics in us that are necessary are listening skills. You know, we always want to talk ourselves. And many times when we talk and we listen to somebody, we're just waiting for them to finish, where we could then say what we want to say. So we're not really listening to them at all. We have a practice in counseling training where we call it active listening, where you are fully engaged with the person. You're watching their eyes, you're watching their shoulders, you're watching their body, you're watching their face, you're watching their breathing, and you're very much aware of what's going on emotionally. It's like you are active. You're not just sitting there passive.
Mm-hmm.
And so empathy is another area for working with. So it's very, I haven't found it effective at all to come on when somebody is grieving and crying and depressed and won't get up and won't go out and won't shower and won't eat and won't whatever. I haven't found it helpful to go to that person and say, oh, get over it. Come on, wake up. Come on, let's do something. You know, you got to go out and be happy and come on, get showered. Let's go for dinner or whatever. Because sometimes that can happen 3 or 4 weeks later, but sometimes you have to just sit and be with the person and try to pick up where that person's soul is at and what's happening with them. I see you got a text.
Yeah, no, we're not reading this one. They won't talk politics and about
okay.
about the carnival.
Okay, now tell them to give that a break for
today. Just for a moment, we're going to get back to that. Because what I'm concerned about is that in this social media culture, right? It's like we get on Facebook. We understand how people use it because we use it the same way. I want to show off a little bit, right? But we see somebody post something, and then our response is to sort of diss them or make fun of them, right? And it's like we don't see, I call it an opportunity, but we don't see the opportunity to give somebody the gift, right, of bigging them up,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I want to encourage people to give that gift of sort of support,
mm-hmm.
a like, a heart,
mm-hmm.
you know, a congratulations, even if it's the smallest thing. And also, if somebody is experiencing something negative, right, let's give them the gift of turning it around on social media.
Listen, there's so many things, Aaron, we can do. There's so many people in this city and in the Bahamas who are older and they suffer from severe critical loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not grief in a way, but it is, because in their loneliness, they grieve what they once had when they had activities and children and people and family. I know two of my aunts who lived in Curran, in Eleuthera, you know, got old and were living by themselves. And every time I would call them and talk to them, it's like, is everything okay? And yes, but I'm just so lonesome, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember writing to the church in Curran at one point and saying, you know, it's really important. It's more important than going to worship at 11 o'clock on Sunday to go and spend some time with some of these isolated, housebound older people who probably don't see anybody except their immediate relative for 1 or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take long. You don't have to do this long. You can actually visit them for 5 minutes. Just go to the door. You don't even have to go inside. I remember a year or two ago before COVID started, I have three dear older women who are in I think they just turned 80. And these are no relatives of mine, but I just love them to death.
Yeah.
One lives in Inagua, one's from Lower Borg, one's from JC, living in Nassau.
Okay.
And yeah. I cooked dinner for them. I invited the three of them to come to my house, invited some other people. I got a big cake, happy birthday, put each of their names on it. We sang happy birthday. We had them talk about their life and share stories. And what an incredible thing, hey? And what did that take? A little bit of imagination, minimal money,
yeah.
and a little bit of arranging,
yeah.
and pick them up and drop. And it was one of the most incredible nights of my life. I will never forget it. They will never forget it. So there's things we can do.
And look here, you're going to make your Grammy jealous. If your Grammy know you out there entertaining other members of her generation, she can be jealous. She's going to demand your attention.
But I didn't have any Grammys left. You see, they're all gone. These were my Grammys.
Yeah. So yeah. Reg, I want to ask you a little question. I saw this video. I know the Governor General, he will travel and he will go and bring birthday greetings, right, to all of our centenarians.
I know where
you're
going. Do you know Vera? Very, very well.
Is she from Savannah Sound or Palmetto?
Toppin Bay.
That's Toppin Bay.
Yeah,
oh, they never let me back into Eleuthera. I didn't get the Toppin Bay accent.
Yeah, that's Toppin Bay.
But listen, if you had seen the video where the Governor General went to visit Miss Vera.
I saw it.
And Miss Vera said, but as about to say, I come to bring you something. She said, I like money just like you, sir. Anyway, I tell that story to share this with you guys. Don't think that you go into some old person house and be just going to read from the Bible. Your ancestors, your community members, they are still full of life and jokes and joy. And plenty of them have functioning kitchens and they can cook for you if they could cook for you. Like, let's help each other understand the gift.
Yeah, Miss Vera is I've known her for close to 40, 50 years. She is the grandmother to my dear friend Jennifer Carey, who is now in doing ministry in Georgia.
Okay.
I was to her 100th birthday celebration on Paradise Island. Wonderful time. She's an incredible woman, member of the Tobin Bay Methodist Church, a lot of children, a lot of grandchildren, brilliant mind, and her mind is as good as mine.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible experience to watch that on the video. It was so fun.
Yes, but I mean, this is, you're depriving yourself of something
if you
don't go make a way and try meet Miss Vera. In fact, I voted for Miss Vera for National Hero.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
So here is where, here is what we're drawing from this. One of the things, because I like somewhat wrapping up and pulling out conclusions.
Yeah.
The fact is, there one of the best ways for us to work with grief is to help other people. There's something inherent in when we connect and we start to work with and help other people. My line of grief recovery training was done by the Grief Recovery Institute out of California. They don't call it grief therapy, they call it grief recovery, because the theory of the training and certification with that is that you can recover,
mm-hmm.
that grief and loss is something that you can get better from and you can recover. And part of that recovery is being active in your own healing and being aggressive in your own healing. In other words, one of the things we do in the in grief recovery training is we write lots of letters. So, for instance, when my friend Joe Robinson died, who you know very mm-hmm. well, that's how I got into grief recovery, because he died. He was 47, had cancer, brilliant mind. He had started the Ashe dance troupe in Jamaica, all over the world, performed at the Lincoln Center, all over Europe, mm-hmm. Broadway, and I could not deal with his death. He was very ill in the hospital in Miami. He asked to come home to be at my house because he wanted to be at my house, and that's all he kept asking for. His cousin went and brought him home, and he was probably home maybe 11 days or so before he died. But I sat there with him through all of the grief, and he kept asking me every day he would ask me 30 times, Reg, am I going to die? And so I had that to deal with, and I couldn't deal with it. So I went to get grief therapy myself,
mm-hmm.
and then ended up going into the training and becoming a certified grief recovery worker. But part of what I did, I wrote so many letters to him in the process of the grief therapy, of the grief recovery, and dealt with things from years and years ago. Because many times the thing that keeps us trapped in grief is the reoccurring, the going over of mm-hmm. the stories. And unless there's some way of purging or getting that out of our system, and sometimes talking about it to somebody else, it has all sorts of variations. We don't feel the person is listening good enough, or we don't tell the full truth because we can't really say the things that's on the deepest part of our minds. But if we know that we could sit down in a group and write this out page after page, and then after that we burn it or tear it up or bury it or do whatever, that we're not going to share this with anybody, somehow it has a therapeutic value whereby when you exorcise it, you get it out of your system, and you start looking at it. You take it home and you read it every day for a week, and then you write another letter. And by the time you get finished the process, a few weeks, maybe 9 weeks or so, you're getting to the point where you can then write letters that are not sad. You start then to write letters to tell Joe about what you're doing now,
yeah.
and how much you miss him, and how much he would enjoy what you just did last night and whatever. And you see, that's a transformative process that begins to happen when you start doing the work. You know, the inner work is the key to grief recovery.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And that process
of
getting comfortable.
Yes.
Right, over and over again. Thank you so much for sharing that.
It can't happen without process, Aaron. It can't happen. You just, and let me tell you something. Sometimes there's miraculous healing. I believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
And many times we bring about our own healing in cooperation with whatever relationship we have with God, with the deity, the universe, wherever we are. You know, and spirituality is not religion. Spirituality is not tradition. Spirituality is not going to church per se. It is, but it's not only that.
Right.
And many of us basically are on a path of experience in life that does not go deep enough into our own yearnings and our own souls. And I think there's a call now in throughout the world where people are not satisfied with what they're getting and what's being told to them in churches and what's being preached from pulpits. And people are saying, there's got to be more. I have, you know, I'm at the age now where I've got a number of friends who are my same age who are questioning, you know, is there anything else for me in life? What does life mean?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those questions come up when somebody close to us dies.
Yeah.
And when my brother-in-law died, he was 72, he didn't want to die. Mm-hmm. I told the doctor in the hospital in Kendall, in South Miami, I said, if husband dies, he will die against his will.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has fought for almost 8 years to live.
Yeah.
And if we see him die, he's dying against his will. Many people die against their will, but it's like Joe died against his will. He didn't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other tragedy sometimes that shocks us into action is when somebody like Terrence Bethel dies. We talked about him on my last show.
Yeah.
A sudden death, and you just get a phone call to say, Terrence is dead. And what do you do with that? How do you live from that? There's a theory that of what one of my longtime friends from Bethune-Cookman University, who she was the president of the university at one point, Dr. Trudy, she said that most theories in transformative leadership development, that you actually only change your life as a result of a critical incident.
Mm-hmm.
And critical incidents is you go to the doctor and they tell you you've got cancer, your mother dies suddenly, your best friend dies suddenly, you get an accident, you come out of the accident and your car's totally finished off, you've survived, you don't have a scratch. Things that happen that cause you to stand still and stop, she termed them critical incidents.
Mm-hmm.
And her theory was that major life changes only happen after you have had a critical incident experience.
Mm-hmm.
Then you reevaluate. Then you're willing to make changes and you're willing to say, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I've got to live my life differently. Grief causes that in people. And as sad as grief is, and as much as it can weigh us down, grief is an open door to a new you.
It's transformative.
It's transformative.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
So I got a caller on the line, then we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the clock.
Good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning. How you doing?
And to your guests. You know, Ms. Green, it's sad. I was born into a family with one brother, one sister, a mother, and a father. Father's dead, mother's dead, older brother died, there's only me and a sister. For some reason, my sister turned away from the family and moved to live right here in New Providence on the eastern end. I live on the western end. But somehow she's lost touch and don't interact with the family. And it bothered me for years and years. But I always reach out every year, call her to wish her happy birthday.
All right.
Tell her one day, hello.
I'm right here.
Until she said, you know, I don't really need you to call me every year to wish me happy birthday. I said, but you're my only sister. You're 2 years younger than me. April the 7th is your birthday. And I will always call you to wish you happy birthday. I sat with the family by David Allen, and I spoke about this. And he said, Sparky, keep reaching out. And I can tell you the truth. Let me tell you how sad this is sometimes. Last year, year before last, I left Pride Estate. I drove all the way up into Camperdown. Came to this big gate, pushed the button. I got the voice on the button. Who's that? I say, sis, this is your brother. Today is your birthday. Well, what you doing up here? I said, today is your birthday. I drove all the way up there to wish you a happy birthday. I'm busy. Can you come back another time?
Oh,
Miss Green, that was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I will not make that trip again. She's somebody who shows up to weddings and funerals. That is sad when families fall in love with other families and diss their own. Well, have a good day.
Thank you, Sparky. Listen, you almost caused me try. I'm going to adopt you, Sparky, but you's pinch. I know you is the pinching kind, and my insurance ain't set up like that. But thank you for sharing that, Sparky. When we come back from the...
We'll just say a word.
Yeah, let's talk about other types of loss.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Thank you, producer. Come on, Irene. That's what I call it, right? It's good night, Irene. From my boarding school days in England, this is definitely a night stopper. Yeah, this is lots of fun. Thank you. You've been tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We only go into a commercial break. We got more show for you, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
At Fidelity, the holidays are all about family, spending time with loved ones, and being thankful for the little things in life. Worrying about bills should be the last thing on your mind, especially during the holidays. Let Fidelity help you get your bills under control. Fidelity can also get you started with a real savings plan that actually pays you interest. The only thing you need to think about is what you will do with the savings in your pocket this Christmas. Now that's what I'm talking about. Fidelity Bank is here for you this holiday season because you are family, and family is important to us.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Nahaja Black, and I am wishing you and your family happiness, joy, peace, and prosperity this holiday season and throughout the new year from all of us at Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I told you we wouldn't be long. We wouldn't be long at all. So, Reg, we had that point by Sparky just now about the loss of family, right? And sort of this tension between living family members and significant others that you've lost, but not to death.
Yes.
And because there are all kinds of loss.
Yes.
And sometimes we act like, well, you didn't lose a whole person. Like, ain't nobody dead, so why are you so upset? But at the same time, that type of loss can be just as traumatic or heavy or impactful.
Debilitating.
Debilitating as a loss of life.
Yeah. So, Erin, let me say before we go further that this conversation is a good conversation. I wish we could branch this into other sections of society where, you know, we can have conversations about this. Because some of the things we need to talk about, we don't talk about. We spend most of our lives talking about unimportant, frivolous stuff when people are hurting. And so one of the things that we need to recognize is that most of our families, there's very few families that don't have issues. And there's very few families that don't have secrets, and there's very few families that don't have non-functional kind of traditions and things that's gone on all of their lives. And the truth is that when those stories keep being told, they keep repeating themselves into the next generations. So we need to be careful about that and talk sometimes about some of the things that concern us. But it's very, let me say, it's very difficult to have family discussions. It's not easy. Because people have etched out their little roles in the family, and it's like if you, that's their turf and that's who they are, that's how they get their identity. If they get into situations where they feel that's threatened, then all sorts of stuff starts to take place.
But grief is really a condition that we feel from any kind of loss.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you lose your job and you didn't want to stop working and you've become redundant or you've been fired or you've been let go or you don't have... Now, a lot of that's happened these last 2 years. There's a lot of grief around work issues in mm-hmm. the country right now.
Oh, yeah.
No one is... I don't think a lot of processing is taking place. It may be, and if it is, I'm happy. But when a person has their job and their profession as part of who they are and their identity, to lose that, they've lost a part of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it is accompanied by a deep level of sadness and grief.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, I think in this particular context, the Bahamas, we got a couple of cultural things taking place around that, right? The idea that you are not a man or a woman unless you turn your own key in your own house, unless you're responsible for your own mortgage payment or your own rent payment. Right? And so the loss of a job and the ability to do those things then strikes at one's identity.
Absolutely.
And I don't think we've taken into account the extent to which that has impacted men in particular in this town.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And people, for instance, who have worked all their lives and now find that they can't work, they can't find a job, they're home all day. And it's like, those are some issues. I mean, there's a lot of them going on right now in the Family Islands as well. So loss is widespread. You know, there's a lot of fallout with friends,
mm-hmm.
like people who've been friends for years. We touched on this in the last show, and they suddenly they don't value friendship anymore. Somebody moves or doesn't speak, or you know,
You've lost this job, or you no longer work in this space or in this industry, and now I can't make time to hang out with you. Mind you, I understand you're busy, right? And we don't normally naturally meet up because mm-hmm. we would naturally be in the same place at lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
naturally go to the same meetings in the
mm-hmm.
evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you're not making that effort
yep.
now that I'm not
yep.
in that space to connect
yep.
with me.
Yep. Yeah, and so one of the things I wanted us to touch on before the show ends
yes.
is that you asked me when we were getting ready for the show a question in terms of how do we deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with loss and grief? And I think one of the things that I want to try to make clear and for everybody to have a feeling of that, when we talk about grief and loss, we're not just talking about funerals and when somebody in our family or a friend dies. That's for sure the most grief that we know about,
mm-hmm.
and the one that we're most accustomed to. But all sorts of loss, like when I thought I'd lost my phone yesterday. Now I know people's going to say this is frivolous and silly, but it's like that has so many ramifications in terms of that's my loss of contacts, that's my loss of my friends, can't contact me no more, my business can't you know, all of my work contacts, everything is gone. And it's like, okay, so it's not something that I won't easily get over because I will work with that, whereas you can get another phone, you can't get another mother or another friend
mm-hmm.
or another sister or another brother. But loss is a major thing. And what happens is it turns us inflective on our insides. And some of us, if we don't have a very strong self-worth understanding, we then somehow feel that it's our fault, that this is always happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm always a person that's getting the bad end of the stick here. And, you know, God, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
So one of the things I want to say very clearly is I don't believe God does these things to us. I'm very clear. I always very clear about that when I preach and speak
yeah.
to people.
God didn't cause all my mangoes to drop out my tree.
No,
raccoon in the bush caused it to drop out the tree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think we need to be very clear about that. And how can we help ourselves? And one of the things we did at Ebony's on Sunday night, which I wanted to talk a little bit about, because we weren't able to have our Christmas concert in 2020,
2020.
Yeah.
Because of COVID and stuff. So we're debating, are we going to do it this year? Is it going to happen? And it's like, yeah, let's just do it. And we had limited seating and we gave out tickets, free tickets, to make sure we didn't get the church overcrowded and all of that kind of stuff. But we wanted to talk with about how you reset your life now and how you deal with the hurt and the sadness and the miss and what.
Mm-hmm.
So the theme was comfort and joy. And what we did was we developed a theory of getting two candles and putting them in proper places in our homes. One of the candles we would call the candle, the comfort candle, and the other candle would be the joy candle. And I encourage the people to be very careful. You know, get the kind of candle you want.
Yeah.
You may want a gold candle, a black candle, pink candle, white candle, big candle, but put it somewhere prominent on your kitchen counter, on your dining room table, on your in the living room. And make a label on it. Call it, this is a comfort candle. Every time you feel during this Christmas season and during the next weeks or whatever that you are getting overwhelmed, that grief is hanging heavy on you,
mm-hmm.
and that you can't cope anymore, take a minute out, get a lighter, a box of matches, go and sit in front of the comfort candle, light the candle, and just be quiet and just sit there and just look at the flame. And start to literally inhale the peace and tranquility of the flame.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever you pray to, whatever you say, however you deal with your inner life, you know, ask for strength and comfort and just be by yourself for a while. And likewise, like when you're feeling a little bit of joy and or you want joy or whatever, go light the joy candle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple, some people will say, well, that's very simplistic and that's so stupid, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, if you know this, I'm sure you know this, when you sit and you gaze into fire, like a candle flame burning, mm-hmm. something happens inwardly. It almost cleanses. And so we have to develop our own little rituals. One of the other things I do on Christmas Day, for instance, all of us who come together around mm-hmm. the table, because I have a lot of friends coming in for dinner, we put candles on the tables. And before we say the blessing, we light a candle for all of our people who have left us.
Mm-hmm.
So we light a candle for husband, my brother-in-law. We light a candle for my friend's sister. We light a candle for, you know, and we just sit there for a moment. And yes, it's sad, but we move it to the point where we've brought them into our presence and we will never forget them. And that's why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you can't ever stop talking and bringing the people, because what you're doing is you're saying that their life is not dead. Physically, they're dead. But what they were to you and the lessons you learned from them and the lessons you continue to learn from them
mm-hmm.
will never die.
Absolutely. Reg, let's take this last call, and then I've got a few texts here that I think we have to read. Arlington, let's get to that caller that's been waiting. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, I like this topic, and I listen to the spiritualist or the religious guy. He's correct. You know, I just wanted to make an input,
mm-hmm.
not concerning what Sparky said, but that in those scenarios those do happen, but, you know, in the spirituality of life, you know, my father died in front of me, also my Grammy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was a different outlook, and, you know, death, I look at death as balancing. You have to balance. God made death to balance the earth. You look at animals and plants, they die. So I kind of look at it in a philosophical sense that it is done to balance the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, some of us would resist that. You know, I have a six-year-old and I'm 57, so I'm praying and hoping just to be here mm-hmm. for a certain age. But I look at life as a little bit of melancholy, a little bit of joy, a little bit of this in between. And so we have to learn how to balance it. And so when we talk about the candle and meditating, I know about that. I actually turn off all the lights. Turn off all the music, or sometimes I would listen to music with no words, and it actually brings an inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so we as humans, we are fighting the battle of significance, or rather the battle of insignificance. And so our external vanities and amenities of life has taken away our spirituality. So our inner being is being destroyed, and this is why we have contempt for the Haitians, we have contempt for one another, and we lack respect for one another. In certain ancient societies, you have to respect one another, but this is the result of the diaspora. You know, this is what it has caused, a schism in us, and this is the curse on us. Have a good day.
Thank you, 52. Boy, you take me to get a little revolutionary and how we carry memory in our body and all kind of thing. But thank you so much, 52, for that contribution. I'm going to read these. Arlington, you get that one last caller? Good morning, caller. You got 30 seconds. I got to get to these texts.
Aaron, Holy Spirit, Glenn.
Blessings, Bremen. How you doing?
Much the same to you. I called this brother, right? How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Wonderful.
Yeah, doing well.
The reason why... What you said again?
I'm doing well.
Okay, wonderful. The reason why I called, you said something about somebody then, or people dying without them wanting to die.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, how do you look on the other side of that? They don't want to die, but they have to die. They're going to die. Or people going to die.
I'll say this. Let me share this with you, Bremen. When my grandmother, Corinne Mitchell, was coming towards the end, right? She would literally tell us, I'm ready to go.
Yep, that's the other end.
And I had to process that in a quick... And fortunately, I was able to process it quickly.
What I would have liked for him to answer me before...
No, Bremen, I just tried to give you a little, answer, man, and then I can let him answer you.
Okay.
Right? But I... Because I used to say, man, Grammy, you really... I think to myself, you really ready to go? You don't love us enough to stay here? But then I realized it's something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It's something totally different. Reg?
Yeah, I don't think, like... And to be honest with you, you asked me now if I want to die. Of course I don't want to die. I don't think you probably want to die.
But you have to die.
But yeah, everybody has to die, but you don't necessarily want to. So, I just lost one of my dear family members in Eleuther in the Current, and she was 93, Roey. And Roey, for the last 3 or 4 months of her life, she kept saying, I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. And every night when her daughter put her to bed and stuff, she said, I believe tonight my father may come to get me. And it's like she wake up next morning, she's still here. Well, he didn't come last night, but he may come tonight. She had lived her life. She was ready to go, like Aaron's grandmother. She was ready to go. What I'm saying is that a lot of people, you got people who have cancer, people have lupus, people have whatever. They fight and fight and fight and fight and do everything it is to live. I don't think people want to die. But I think, you know, people still die and everybody has to die. So we know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I accept that. But on the other side of that, you know, I don't think no one actually who is ill and fighting. There's some people, for instance, who get cancer who say, well, I'm not going to do chemotherapy. I'm just going to accept what happens and whatnot. But people don't generally sit down and say, okay, I'm ready to die. Now let me die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
What I want to say before I go, right? Hello?
Yeah, would you get 5 seconds?
Okay. What I realized with Sparky, right? Sparky are hiding. So what Sparky suggests, do play good things for his sister and off his sister.
Thank you, Bremen. I'm so glad I gave you that 5 seconds there.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Good point.
All right. I got to read these texts.
Go ahead.
My text has been sitting there. It says, I wish I had known all of these things before my mom died. My father died before my mom and shortly after my mom got sick. During her healing period, she would just cry, and I didn't understand why she wasn't being the strong person I knew her to be.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know she was depressed. We tried getting her help, but she didn't want people in her business.
Mm-hmm.
When she died, I blamed myself because I felt like I should have done more. I should have known what to do to help her. Listen, if the commissioner of police wasn't listening to the show, I'd tell you what to do to help her. Sparky, thing is sad. I don't know his family dynamics, but generally speaking, there are two sides there. Okay, to every story. If I had family... Yeah. Thank you. Texter, what I would say to Sparky is we hold a space for your grief in the same way that we hold a space for your sister's grief. And we hope that you understand why we must do it for both of you.
So I have a wrap up?
Yeah, man, wrap up.
Okay. So the last caller is, you know, it was an interesting conversation. I agree. Sometimes what I will say is we have to bless our sadness. I have so many people that I know that have gone through excruciating grief and loss, and
mm-hmm.
people who lost the only person left in their family, and they're the only one living now in their family, and people who just can't cope.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I said Sunday night in that concert to the people gathered, and later it will come on YouTube, is that sometimes you have to bless your sadness. It's nothing wrong with crying. It's nothing wrong with being sad. But what is wrong is losing all hope that you will recover,
that you will smile again and you will dance again.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those people who's listening who are really sad, who don't want to face Christmas and who feel as though they will not get through the holidays because this is the first Christmas that your loved one has gone. The first Christmas, the first birthday, the first anniversary, the first whatever is always, always difficult. And just embrace the sadness and acknowledge it. I'm sad. And you know why you're sad? You're sad because you love somebody so much.
Yeah.
And you're sad because that person loved you.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing to celebrate, but just embrace it.
Yeah.
And bless it. You know, the people that you can't get on with, the people who's causing you anger, and see if you can bless them. Just mm-hmm. bless them. And may God bless you as well, everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Aaron. This has been a wonderful
Absolutely.
Show.
Thank you to my producer, boy. I love your time. And not when I slapping up. But this is such a wonderful topic. And I know that everybody can
yeah.
use this little touch of wisdom and comfort and joy and a space being held for them.
Yeah.
Thank you to my audience for tuning in. Thank you to the texters. Thank you to my producers always. Thank you, Dr. Reverend Uncle Reg Eldon.
Reg is good. Yeah, I like Reg.
Yeah, man.
Happy Christmas, everyone. May God bless everybody.
Blessings.
Yeah, be safe.
Stay tuned. Levon Miller is up next.